Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill. And I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. This is the final podcast episode for 2023. It's also the final episode for this season. We will be taking an extended break at the first part of the new year, kind of catching up, trying to get as many interviews and tech talk that we can prepped and ready for the new season. So yeah, do look forward to that. Sorry, we got a little bit behind these past few months. It's just crazy around the holidays. Better planning next year when it comes to that. So yeah, this final episode, we're going to finish up the conversation that we had with Carl Robertshaw, where we're going to talk a little bit about kind of thoughts on reinventing competition, about previous sport kite competition, the need for mentorship, how to kind of change up judging panels, and how sport kite flying is relevant not only for yourself, but what you're doing and how that relevancy changes over time. In the end, we kind of finish up the conversation with a talk about, you know, how the kite community is special. It transcends politics. It transcends a lot of the other stuff that's going on in our world and how we can find comfort there. So we're going to finish this year with that super positive, strong note, and then we're just going to go ahead and jump on into the new year. So again, if you like what you hear here, consider subscribing, share these episodes with your friends, hit that like button wherever you're at, and there's always buymeacoffee.com/sportkite. Every little bit really does help. So with that, let's go ahead and jump into the second part of this interview with Carl Robertshaw.
You're not digressing. It's all good. I love it. I absolutely love it. Which kind of leads into one of my next questions. You know, we've been talking about choreography. I think it's super important. And kite ballet has been the predominant form of competition. Right. Yeah, we have precision. We have tricks party. Yeah. We have stuff like that. Right. But those are really the only two types of sport kite competition. So here is a really, really hard question. If you were to reimagine sport kite competition, how would it look?
Don't ask me that. Oh, that's a hard one. Reimagine it. I think you've really got to think outside the box, and I would have to think long and hard about that. And it's something that's been mulled over and questioned, and we've interrogated that a lot over the years. And in the kind of mid-90s, I was involved a little bit in the International Rule Book. And there was this thing about, do we include precision figures in the ballet and so on? And, you know, in the conversations we've had recently this year, you know, at the festival, same kind of thing, you know, how do we do it? I think, I don't know is the answer, the direct answer. I think precision has its place, maybe not as its fixed sort of two-dimensional rectangular wind window that doesn't quite apply to the three-dimensional sphere that we, hemisphere that we fly in, especially with team, when you've got distant, you know, forwards to back distance, as it were, depth, and the judges are stood, always stood in the wrong place. Then it's very hard to judge that correctly. It's very hard to fly for the judges, and it takes a lot of reverse engineering to actually get that right. But I think flying precisely has its place, and certainly team flying certainly helps you flight helps your precision. That's just a given, because you have to be in the right place to hit the right spot, otherwise you crash. So precision is a good discipline in of itself, and whether that is incorporated into ballet, I don't know whether that's a good idea or not. I haven't really formed an opinion on that. It's not kind of, I'm probably, yeah, I'll just sort of exit that conversation and leave that to other people to debate. Sort of. I'm quite happy just flying kites. I really like precision for the fact of what you're doing is thinking about this in terms of percussion. So the kites are percussive instruments, as it were. So pace and beat and rhythm are all part of how you construct a precision routine. And imagine that the kite is a puppet or it's a percussion instrument, for instance, then you start to get into a quite an interesting play. So you get quite creative with it. It's not a means to an end, and you're not just doing kind of ice skating figures, as it were. What you're doing is doing a routine that's kind of got some rhythm to it. Ballet is great because that does automatically, you've got something that's all very audience friendly, easy to relate to as an audience member. So that's kind of an easy win. But it's also quite hard to get to fly well, as it were, and to do it repeatedly. And it takes a lot, especially with dual line, it takes a lot of work to choreograph, to get the music right, and to deliver a routine that's well practiced. The level of work that's involved, it's not like a quad line improvised routine, for instance, with, you know, friends who just joined each other that morning, or maybe fly together at a festival, or, you know, it's a whole different animal. It takes so much more effort. So is that what, so maybe there's a kind of question that I've got in the back of my mind that leads me on to, is it too much work, or are people wanting to have an easier time and not put so much work in, because that takes a lot of work to do that. The rewards are higher and are on a, you know, the sort of the what am I trying to say? The rewards are higher because the input is higher as well. Whereas, yeah. Oh no, yeah, it's a funny one. It's a hard one. It's been going on for years as well, you know, yeah. Kind of, you know, especially judging, because you're judging the same figures, the same, you know, not quite the same routine, but is it just don't be boring. Kind of, you know, a lot of, it's too easy to be boring, and, you know, make it interesting for people, you know, for judges, for yourself, you know. So, yeah.
We had a interesting discussion here on the podcast. It was a round table we did at the inaugural Sport Kite Camp.
Oh, wow.
A handful of us, where we kind of brainstormed up a potential new competition format. That would meet essentially a handful of criteria. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, the way we approached it, it has to be interesting to the public. They have to get it, right? Because if it's not interesting to the public or they don't get it, it doesn't need to happen in public spaces, right? Or at festivals and stuff like that. That's something that can...
Yeah.
That can go happen in your backyard. You don't need it to happen at a festival, right? And then the second part is
the thing that an arena is a stage. It's there. It's a public. It's a spotlight. You know, you're there to. There's an expectation, as it were. You're there for a reason, and honor that.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the big takeaways from the WSKIF Sport Kite Camp was you know, honoring not only our craft but honoring the professionalism of coming to a public field and being in front of the public's eyes, whether it's a festival or just a public beach where there's a lot of other people. But yeah, so we talked about having, you know, something that's that engages the public, something that's easy to understand. It has to have a simple goal, right? Precision is hard to understand if you don't know the tricks.
Yeah.
You don't know why someone got 10 points and someone got 5 points because it just did this, right?
Exactly.
And you're like, okay. was that a good thing? Like, yeah. I don't get it, right? And so, Todd, what was one of the other? Oh, is getting rid of the massive amount of infrastructure. So it needs to have absolute minimum infrastructure. And by that we mean, you know, like right now, the current, what is it, the international rule book, you have to have like 7 people. Line judges, field director, actual judge. You have to have so many people. And yeah, they can be dual hat people, But there's like seven positions you have to fill to run a competition. That's ridiculous. If you only have two,
it's ridiculous when you don't have those people.
Right.
When you, yeah, when you've got, you know, 20 odd teams and you know, people are clamoring at the bit to, you know, get closer to the action. It's not ridiculous. So this is where it might be outdated, you know, it's outdated in that sense. So
Exactly. So it makes sense when we have the numbers to sustain that number of people or to demand that number of people, but it doesn't make sense now. Right. And then I think the last part of that was something that essentially eliminated all of these multiple classes and multiple disciplines. Because when you have novice, experienced, intermediate, masters, it's like, so you only have four people show up and you put them into four different categories and they all get first. It's ridiculous.
I mean, when I competed in Australia in Sydney, there were 70 individuals in dual line precision.
Ooh.
So it was done in heats. So that's kind of the scale of what it used to be.
And right. And it made sense then. It made sense then.
Yeah. And now it doesn't. So, yeah. So rethinking it is, yeah, totally, you know, to reimagine it is a absolutely valid question. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we came up with was essentially the best way to describe it is a timed obstacle course. So everybody, regardless of their skill level or concept or their knowledge of kites, understands time. The fastest time wins, right? They don't have to understand anything else about the flying to understand time. So they get when someone wins, plain and simple, right? And then it essentially would be like a handful of things that you need to do and accomplish. So like, say there's a pool noodle standing up in the middle of the field, and you have to start with a 2-point, sport kite or dual line in this case, 2 points on the ground, and you have to get up and over and land 2 points on the other side. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, a novice is just going to take off and they're going to go around and, you know, maybe get there and land. If they hit the pole, you DQ, right? A super experienced person may just launch and do, you know, like a 540 flat spin and drop right back down on the other side. It's higher risk. It requires higher skill and they may get a faster time. But it does equal the playing field between someone who is a novice and someone who's experienced, right? It says, okay, do what you do. And so theoretically, the person with the best fundamental skills is the one that's going to win. We kind of spitballed the idea and we came up with all sorts of like weird ways to like set it up, and it would be, you know, rounds. And so it'd be like everybody gets to try it, you know, like 3 to 5 times.
Yeah.
And then we take your best time or the average of your best 2 times, right? So then it's not, you know, like right now where you may show up and you may work for 3 hours and fly for 4 minutes. Now you would potentially be flying for, you know, 15, 20 minutes in an hour or 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you get a lot more usage out of your time there at the field.
Here's another question. Do we actually need competition? It's a thing that we were talking about, and this is with Paul, as it were, sort of, you know, competition does bring that level of pressure on yourself, but also demonstrating. So getting into the arena, and when you have that pressure itself, pressure, it's the same kind of expectation of yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to get in and do this thing, and I want to, you know, fly like this and stuff. And then, oh, it doesn't work like that. Damn, you know, start kicking yourself, or it goes better than expected, or, you know, you have a few sort of lucky moments or unlucky moments or whatever it is. So, I think the arena is the important thing, getting in front of people. That's the kind of, you know, like public speaking or getting up on stage and, you know, putting yourself at risk, so to speak, of failure means you then start to pitch yourself against yourself. Mm-hmm. So, and for me, that's the, if it's competition, that's, you're getting a score, as it were. That's great. You get an accolade, you know, as it were, at the end, you know, there's a top spot sort of thing. So that it does have a place, but yeah, you know, it's kind of a maybe controversial question, but you know, do you actually need to competition? we will always be looking for ways to compete. That's
yes. You know, yeah. We'll always find a way to compete, even if it's backyard, you know, what have you. So I go back and forth again with, do we need competition? And I struggle with it. I think I kind of have a clear mindset of where we're at right now. Do we need competition at festivals? No, it wastes time. Excluding, say, World Sport Kite Cup, right? Where you have big teams coming, you have a lot going on. But all of these other festivals, no, you don't need competition. Competition eats up way too much time for too little amount of stuff happening in the sky. It no longer deserves the space, right? I want it to. I really do. Because I do believe that there is an element that doing demos is great. And you will push yourself and you will become better and you will do all of those things. But competition will force you to hone in a way that demos won't. And the best examples I have is, look at Cirque du Soleil, right? A lot of the people in Cirque are previous competitive gymnasts, right? Beautiful at their craft, absolutely wonderful at their craft. But the number of people that come through who have only been artists and stayed artists the whole time.
Sure.
They're unique, right?
Yep.
Because by the time you need to go perform your craft, you need to be, in the case of flying, you need to be flying at what, 70, 80% of your ability.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you're going to continuously push that ability, or one of the best ways you can continuously push that ability, is
competition. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
I struggle with it.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. And, you know, the problem in the 90s was, how do we get everybody through in one day? You know, how do we do all of this? We have prison on one day, you have ballet on the other, you know, so there's so many people are signed up for this thing, as it were. Now it's the opposite issue. So,
unfortunately,
how do we make it attractive? You know, how do we, you know, my question is, do we even need to, sort of thing? I think, you know, it's not for, I don't know, I'm kind of, yeah, I politely step out of the conversation when it comes to those kind of things, because I think people who are more energetic in that, who want it more in that space, I think it's for them to have the conversation and to bring their energy into it, and for me not kind of talk about the good old days sort of thing. I'm there to give advice and stuff, but yeah, not to.
You're not, there to inspire, not to.
Yeah, not to make decisions.
Knock them down. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, fully understand.
Yeah.
All right. I will hop onto something else then.
Before, you know, like, what's really nice is, before COVID, I went over to Burke a few times and went out there to mentor teams, and not just the teams that I sponsor, but, you know, the teams that were out there first thing in the morning, you know, at 7 o'clock on the beach, getting a couple of hours in before the pilots meeting, you know, and go and be an extra pair of eyes and give them, you know, fair comment and talk from a position of experience, but also that thing of being on their side, sort of thing. Somebody else is there who's got their back, as it were. You know, they're being seen. That's really important, that people do feel seen. So that was really interesting, to go there without not competing, but to see other teams competing and going for it in that way. And that was really, I'm going to put you on the spot now.
we'll kind of divert from competition, but what you just said there kind of triggered a thought of one thing I somewhat struggle with, and I've been trying to see it, I've been trying to potentially help facilitate it, is when the decline kind of happened, all of the people that were super involved or that kind of got involved near the end, understandably, they're probably burnt out. It just was a lot. So they all kind of just pulled back. So now we have people coming into it without mentorship, without a trusted individual. Like you said, they're down there at 8 o'clock in the morning being like, hey, I'm giving you feedback. It's not, you know, a nobody coming up and critiquing, or someone with, you know, without credentials coming up and being like, well, you really should do this because that looks like shit. It's someone with the credentials and the knowledge and the respect coming up and being like, hey, try this, do this, right? And I've noticed we kind of have a profound lack of that. And so
the last couple of festivals, last few festivals I've been to, there's quite a few people coming out of the woodwork. And it's really interesting. I think it's been long enough now, as it were, for the politics and the kind of that burnout to have subsided and gone away, and seeing faces and names from, I was going to say the heyday, I don't want to call it that, but the sort of, you know, they might have left 15 years ago, 20 years ago, but they've come back, because this thing doesn't leave you, and your experience, the, you know, that when you've done it at a kind of high level for a number of years, you don't lose that experience. It's not like you forget it. And the skill sets are still relevant. And I mentioned Yasu earlier, and it's really good when we get together and so on. And he also does the same in France too, you know, sort of he spends time with the teams. And it's really lovely to watch. Oh, we had this when we did the Red Bull kite performers, was Chris and Yasu working on the music together. And I think Chris was about 18 at the time, and Yasu was a lot older than him. basically just learning from each other and sparking each other off. And it was this brilliant kind of friendship relationship that was happening. And that's what I really enjoy. I see it in work a lot. And what I try to do is encourage people to work together who are from different age groups and experience backgrounds. So when you've got somebody who is 70 and, you know, sort of almost retired, for instance, and you've got somebody who's just fresh out of university and has got tons of energy but no experience, and you put them together and they work brilliantly together, and it's that kind of mix that is really fruitful. So I mean, I just love kites, whatever it is. I love looking up. I love the outdoors. But to see other teams, I know what they're going through and all of those emotions and the hard work that they're putting in. And it's kind of almost a relief to get out there with them and not be the one doing all of that, and them being the ones that are chasing that kind of that ambition, as it were. But then to go out there and it's a real privileged spot to watch it, you know, without all the sort of without like Burke, 400,000 people watching, for instance. You know, just, it's an empty beach and it's just you and them, and that's cool. And it's, like I said before, you know, it's kind of, it reminds me of that time with Top of the Line, when it's just, you know, me pressing the tape recorder and them flying, sort of thing. It's a really lovely place to be. So to anybody who's sort of, and this is, oh, I'm going to jump around a bit, but this is conversations that we used to have as well. It's like, on the judging panel, there should be an artist, somebody who's a painter, somebody who's a choreographer, somebody who's a writer. There should be somebody who's an analyst, who's good with numbers, somebody who's a computer programmer, you know, kind of these different things. And it takes, because this, and Kites does tap into everything that is human, as it were. So science, art, nature, emotions, psychology, poetry, physics, you name it, exercise, outdoors, environment, design, art, the list goes on. But it's, it, you know, you can, you could teach a whole curriculum based just around Kites. Anyway, I digress. Where was I? And judging, wouldn't it be great to have a panel made up of different people who are on different parts of the, not just spectrum, but sphere, but also the thing about different attributes and different ways they think and see. So being, going out there, being a mentor, it's a really great place to be. And anybody who might hear this, who thinks about it, would be very welcome to get out there and give the young kids, I'm going to say, they're not kids, but the babies, you know.
Yeah, the freshies.
Be a parent to them, because, you know, yep. It's brilliant to see how much of a sponge they are to soak it up, mm-hmm. as well. Because, you know, everybody's looking for a bit of advice and, you know, a bit of feedback even. And it's very hard to judge yourself, you know, when you're flying in the team. You know, what's it look like from behind? And if somebody come, you know, is able to, if you're able to give them that extra set of eyes and be generous with, you know, what you're saying, it's hugely valuable to them.
Yeah, I often on the podcast, I use my other main hobby, roller derby, as a,
oh wow,
as kind of a, to create some, I guess, analogies and stuff. And it's just got me thinking of something I just happened. I'm kind of stumbling, sorry. So I'm a coach, and I'm a certified instructor, and I've been teaching derby now for about 8 years.
Yeah.
And like, I just had this happen at one of the practices, a skater who has been with us for about a year and a half. So long enough that they understand their body, they understand moving on skates, you know, they're perfecting their skills, all of this. They came up to me and she asked, she's like, can I ask you a question? I was like, yeah, sure. She's like, I got a question about wheels. And without anything else, I said, yeah, yours are too soft, or yours are too slick. And she's like, how can you tell? I'm like, because I can hear it when you skate around. Yeah. I figured this was going to happen. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, this is just something I'm tuned into. I know these things, right? Yeah. I was like, so I was going to suggest to you to try a lower durometer wheel, or, you know, how you could make this one work. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh my God, you know, that's great. And then she had a question about something else. And I pointed out, I was like, what's happening is you are dropping your right hip slightly without your body centered over your left foot. Right. She's like, how can you see that? I'm like, again,
experience.
Yeah, yeah. And I spend so much time focused on these minute little things, these body mechanic things, instead of putting a Band-Aid and just trying to be like, well, force yourself to do it this way. It's like, oh, well, the reason why it's not working, why you're struggling so hard, is because you just You just need to tweak it like half an inch this way.
And that will make the difference. It's like with the team when the Canadian guys were flying, it's just like, you got to stand, just step back a bit. Or Paul was, you know, I was at number one, Paul's at number two. It's like, Paul, your hands need to be on my shoulder. You're coming forwards too much. You get turbulence and then the whole thing gets thrown off. It's a simple thing. Or, you know, the lines are too short or too long or too light or too heavy, or, you know, just your feet are too fast, or you're not, you know, you can feel it on, you know, so in a team, you can, or just, watching from behind, you can see if somebody's tense or not, you know, relax, where you're looking, you know, how you're moving, body language, all of that, all of those things. From outside, you can see it, and to say it, just, it's amazing seeing how, as well, the reward, as it were, for you mentoring, seeing them pick it up and, or not, but then pick it up and it happens. And very quickly, you've got the kind of development happening.
Yeah.
And you know, it's something that you can't, you don't get, you have to really, really analyze yourself if you're going to do it yourself. And that's very hard. But somebody
from outside,
it's really rewarding. I really like it. It's being a teacher, isn't it? So teacher, mentor, parent, all of those things, it's all wrapped up. And I really like that. I like doing that as well. It's all I've done the work. Now I can sort of, you know.
You've paid your dues, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've done the work, and you know, I know enough, as it were, to be able to, you know, speak to somebody else. So yeah, so there are people around who are popping up, and that's really encouraging. I felt really encouraged over the last this year I've been to a few kite festivals, and it's like, oh wow, you know, so and so and so and so and so and so. It's like, yeah, I just thought I'd come along. I hadn't been to a festival before. So, you know, we're sort of coming out of that COVID time of lockdown, people have been separated and isolated and stuff. And now there's a, you know, like with everybody, there's a hunger for getting back to events. We're seeing that with work as well. And there's been a drought, and there's also been enough distance, water under the bridge, as it were, for people to come back.
Yeah.
Without, you know, without the politics, without the kind of issues from before, because, you know, relationships get strained and stuff and all of that. And yeah. Anyway. I have several people in mind, but they've popped up at the festivals, and it's been great. And they've said why they weren't around for the, you know, past 10 years and stuff. And it's like, you know, sometimes you don't know, but you know, they've come back, and it's like, yeah, good. You know, you're back to where you belong. Some of us haven't gone away.
I love seeing it. I love seeing people come back. Going kind of back to that mentorship thing, and that teaching thing. Like I do right now. Now I don't have for skating. I don't necessarily have a mentor or a teacher.
Sure.
So I have to do a lot of my own self-assessment.
Yeah.
And I do that through video. You know, I take how I feel, and then I add in the video, and then I try to micro look at what's happening. But I've only been able to do that because I spend all the time watching other people.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, because of course, a lot of us at the beginning, we want to be self-taught. We want to like teach ourselves these things, but you struggle so freaking hard.
But that's a long way around. It's taken a long route round, or is it, learning from somebody who's done that lesson.
Yeah.
And one thing I've thought about as well, it's like, you know, when you do something for so long, I saw it with a few people, like, I'm going to say old school kite flyers, who were kind of, they got a bit, like, irrelevant, if I could say that. And you see that with kind of music artists and so on, and they're kind of, you know, these old guys who are just trudging out the same old stuff, and it's like they're not young anymore, and they're not, you know, they don't have it, they don't have the voice, or they don't have the energy that they did. And when their existence was based around that, it worked, but then you become, or they become irrelevant or less relevant as they become a has-been, as it were. So it's like, it was really good to go to Burke to mentor, to go as a mentor. It's like, you know, I'm not talking about old competitions or competitions of old sort of thing, or kind of reminiscing all the time. It wasn't that case. You know, we can all tell stories of our experiences, but what's happening now? What's fresh? What's, you know, what's happening in the future? How do I stay relevant, but also how does this stay relevant as a whole, as it were? So by keeping looking forwards is really important. And that thing, you know, by coming from that place of having a back catalogue or kind of all of that experience, or that experience, bringing that into a mentoring role is really valuable, I think, and is relevant, you know, keeps you relevant, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hope.
That's what I hope too. You made a comment a little bit ago that just kind of reminded me of a side conversation I've had with some folks. Actually, they messaged me and they asked if I had the stats for this. And I was like, I have no way to find the stats for that. They asked, what is the percentage of people that are involved in kiting, you know, specifically like our level of kiting? So not weekend warrior has a kite in the and just flies like two times they go to the beach. Like, this is actually something they're really passionate about. Yeah. So what is the percentage
who
of those
in a vehicle over other stuff?
Like... Right, right. So what is the percentage of those people who are autistic, on the spectrum, neurodivergent, neurospicy?
Yeah, I reckon a lot.
Me too. I was like,
and I think
it's a lot of people.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people are. I mean, it's been called a spectrum, but actually, it's more of a sphere, isn't it? So it's, you know, everybody's somewhere on, you know, everybody exists somewhere around, somewhere in that, and it's, you know, sliding scales or whatever. So there's room enough for everybody. It's not about exclusivity or exclusion or difference being a problem or an issue. It's about this thing about celebrate. I mean, you know, I had it with my big project last year, Pollinations, about celebrating difference. And our little tagline in that project was a diverse community builds a stronger community. And that was definitely the case in, you know, plants and ecosystems and our, you know, human social communities are an ecosystem in that way as well. And the kite world collects a brilliant array of weird and wonderful, colourful people with all sorts of different backgrounds. And I think probably a high percentage of them are slightly off mainstream.
Yeah, neurospicy.
It's like, you know, how do you, it's fluid, as it were. It's kind of somewhere, you know, And it's lovely because people are expressing themselves upwardly and outwardly. And it's this thing of, sort of there's a lot of positives to it and very few negatives, and that's what people are drawn to as well within each other as well, which is great.
I like to think of it in a very positive way. Unfortunately, the word has negative context with it, or I like to think of it as like the happy orphanage, right? We all come from these weird aspects of life, right? But then we come into this orphanage and we're like, oh my God, I can blossom here. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, my history and my background isn't the same as yours, but now I get to be this whole other person. I get to be me here. I get to do these things.
Yeah, you're tapping into what I talked about on the in the campfire thing, which is you know, very much my story as well. It is that. You know, this is it's a space where I get to express myself fully in all different ways. And I've found it very welcoming and hugely rewarding, and I've got to, I'm a better person for having kites in my life and having kite people in my life and being privileged enough, or being privileged to have been invited and taken to places I would never dream of going, and meeting people I would never dream of, choose to meet, as it were. But that's been so incredibly fruitful and brilliant, and I'm so thankful for that, for what kite has brought. And I know I'm not the only one, because like with Chervia, I mentioned it before, it's kind of, it's a bit like kind of Woodstock, like famous Woodstock, but with kites. And Katerina and Claudio invite artists who use kites as their medium to come to the festival, and it's a great exchange of ideas and culture and everything. And it's a pilgrimage for people, because it's a place for rejuvenation. You plug back in. Ramlal says you go for a week and you have ideas for a year when you come away. And yeah, you know, it's a place to, oh God, I mean, you're guaranteed to have tears of laughter, tears of joy. You're going to be exhausted but exhilarated, and it has every emotion going for you. and so many surprises. And that's another festival with high expectations but with low obligations, so that people bring their best, and it's powerful for that. And yeah,
I do really love what the kite community has brought for me, the opportunities it's presented, the people I've met. You know, like right now I have two people that are my mentors and my absolutely dear friends. I love them. I'm inspired by them. Their artwork hangs in my home, or in our home, in Paul and I's home. And you know, it brought me to Paul, so really can't complain.
It's kind of funny, isn't it, that something so simple like a kite, or you know, the love of kites, can open up this whole world. And I think it's amazing how it does bring out the best in people. Isn't the Chinese proverb something like, children should fly kites because when they fly kites they look up and they open their mouths and expel bad energy? And I think, isn't that the case for everybody flying kites, that you know, it's exercise, but it's outdoors and it's fulfilling and artistic and poetic and relevant and current, and you've got to be in the moment and meditative and creative, and you know, the adjectives keep coming, but that's fantastic that it's built around something so simple, and we can express ourselves authentically through it as well, especially for people who don't get to do that in the real world. I mean, we're seeing, you know, touch on this, we're seeing, you know, we've here in the UK, we've just had the Conservatives have just had their party conference, and the shit that they're spouting is the same shit that Margaret Thatcher spouted in the 80s.
Oh God. And
it's dangerous. It's like it's dangerous. It breeds hate, and it means that people like me are again told, you know, me as a teenager with growing up in my formative years, going through the AIDS crisis, being told that I'm diseased, that I'm worthless, that I'm a horrible person and I don't deserve to exist. To tell kids that is the most dangerous thing, and my God, that is still happening. And why the hell have we got this backwards, archaic, bullying type of stupid, like, it's not stupid, it's aggressive language happening from people who are supposed to be responsible, yet we know how we treat a community by how we treat people on the outskirts, you know, talking about, you know, the donut economy and donut society. You can see how good a community is by how they treat, how it treats people on the outskirts. And we're not doing a good job in this country. And, you know, you're in America, it's like, we don't need to bring that up as well, because the same things are there too. And, you know, this is, it's not good. Anyway, to come back around, what we do have in the kite community is we have a high level of care for each other. And that is incredible, that within a community that is so varied and around the world, and our common language is something so simple, like a piece of string with a bit of fabric, or, you know, with some sticks on the end of it, and we're stood in the wind. That's bonkers that we get to share ourselves in such a brilliant way, and to celebrate each other, and to have dialogue that is around such a simple vehicle. I think it's a long way around of answering your question, but I think we in the kite world, we do have a brilliant community, and that's for everybody to applaud themselves, I think, you know, in that sense. And we do accept difference, and we do, you know, it's amazing kind of going to, again, coming from, I'll go back to those routines that I did in Kites at Willett, Michigan, where I put on a track that I thought, it's a Saturday, end of the day, and I thought, okay, I'll put on Scissor Sisters, Let's Have a Kiki. And
oh, I love that,
you know, that one. It's great. And, you know, it's great in turn because everybody has a dance to it, and you just kind of put it on and it kind of gets people in the mood. But
a lot of people don't know what it means.
Of course. So. It starts off with two bitches, and then there's a motherfucker that comes in pretty quickly. And then I'm thinking, and they turn the music down, and I'm thinking, I don't think there's any more. And of course, there's another motherfucker which slips through. And then it's like, okay, then it gets turned off. And kind of, this is a fact, you know, this is a family show, da da da. Okay, I forget where I am, sort of thing. Okay, you know, so I do respect where I come, you know, where I am at the time, and I slipped up. So big apologies, but it just reminds you of kind of, oh, wow. So, yeah, this, I am in, you know, I am in a different country. I'm in a different place. Culture is slightly different here. It's not identical. It's not, you know, the UK, or it's not Italy, for instance, where, you know, I've flown to all sorts of stuff in Italy, and, you know, I've checked in with Claudio, and he just says, I love it. It's art, you know, and it is, you know, if you've got that approach, it is. But of course, you know, if it is a family, you know, it depends how the festival is set up, and, you know, what the sort of, what the lay of the land is, as it were. So, yeah, so, you know, I'm the outsider coming in, you know, it's not for me to dictate. It's for me to respect the rules, the social rules, as it were. You know, that's that. Don't know where I was going with that, but anyway.
Well, if you're okay with it, because we've gone on now for quite a bit, we can go ahead and end on that note.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Great.
Wonderful.
Any last little things you want to say, or information about yourself, like if people want to get more info about you, your website, stuff like that?
Yeah, so my website, it's a field of blue with some playful dots, and it's my name, so it's colrobertshaw.com, and you can email me through that. And then I sort of got my main work images on there, so that's mostly live events and some space satellites. It's cool. And I've got my Instagram, which is probably the main place that I put stuff up. That's kind of my most current stuff, so that's Carl Robert Shaw, all one word. And yeah, I'm look forward to seeing people on a kite field soon, and yeah, sharing the sky, because that's what we do. And yeah, everybody's up for a chat, and it's really nice to socialize with people as well, and you know, and to cross-pollinate, so to speak, in terms of, you know, where people come from and what we all share and what we can learn from each other. I think that's cool. So yeah,
absolutely.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the second half of that interview with Carl. And again, this is the final episode of 2023 and of the current season. We will be taking a short break coming up for the next month or two, and then hop back into the new season with new format, new music, new tech, new debates, new everything. We're going to kind of shift things up, make this podcast a little bit more relevant for the Sport Kite Flyers out there. So yeah, would love to get your feedback. Go ahead and send it to info@sportkite.org. We'd love to hear what you think. Any suggestions you have, we're trying to make them happen. May just be a little bit slow, but we are trying to make them happen. And as always, yeah, I hope you're having a wonderful time out there. I hope the wind is just absolutely perfect. And I hope your Christmas stockings or Hanukkah stockings or holiday stockings, whichever faith you believe in or don't believe in, I hope you receive something wonderful for the holidays that is kite related and helps you pursue your kite dreams. All right, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close out, hit the field, and enjoy this wonderful winter weather we have going on here. Bye!